It's time for the Canadian Baseball Network podcast with your host, Dustin Saraceni.
Today we have the managing director of the incredible Okotoks Dogs program, John Arcandia. I appreciate you joining us today. The more I read about you, the more it was clear that I think there's a quote that said John Arcandia has become synonymous with baseball greatness, synonymous with amateur baseball, and it's also clear to me that your name carries respect not only in the prairies but from coast to coast. So I appreciate you coming on the Canadian Baseball Network podcast, and I just want to start from the beginning. All right, John, so you co-founded the Okotoks Dogs in 1995, a team that started in Calgary before making its way to the small town of just 24,000 people. I guess the first question is, why did you leave?
The reason we left originally was because we were really chased out of the AAA stadium that was in Calgary. Calgary had a AAA team that originally called the Calgary Cannons that were affiliated with various teams. And Russ Parker, the owner, ended up selling that team to Albuquerque, a group from Albuquerque, New Mexico. So at that stage, I was in Vancouver with my youngest son, mm-hmm. who was working with coaches because he'd been selected to the junior national team. So there were no real coaches here, and I didn't want to work with him being, you know, it's your own kid. So I'm in Vancouver, and Parker phoned and said that he felt kind of bad leaving Calgary, a fairly big city, without any baseball. He knew I had started the Dogs in 1995, and would I be interested? So I told him that what I'd become interested in was summer collegiate format, because again, it was amateur. I felt it was kids on the way up that were credible schools. I thought that, you know, you had really good role models. I saw it in sort of a baseball development context, mm-hmm. Similar to what I'd already been doing with the original Dogs through sort of the development of high school kind of players. And so anyway, we formed that team, came back to Calgary, had success here, relatively speaking, but in a big city, the summer collegiate club now would be drawing 500 fans a game or and sometimes less, but that would be sort of an average. And because it's, you know, big cities will want, Toronto wants to watch the Blue Jays. You know, mm-hmm. they want a professional team at the top level. Calgary thought that they should have the same. They loved the Stampeders, they loved the Flames. But they weren't very interested in any, you know, second level, double A, single A level type baseball. And so it was a struggle. But ultimately, our city politicians decided that independent ball was the way to go. And we essentially got chased out by the independent team because we were averaging more people than they were averaging per game. And the result was a lot of acrimony between us and the independent baseball team. I think they're called the Vipers eventually. They went through three or four iterations. All of them went broke. And I was watching a game with Don Seaman, who I'd known for years, and Don has always been a big believer in combining athletics and academics, and he's a man of few words, but the words he uttered that started this whole thing was that, John, we have to build the Dogs their own baseball stadium. And that was the beginning of an initiative to find land and come up with a partnership that made sense in the greater Calgary area. And that led to the whole Okotoks Dogs program.
Was the way the town kind of welcomed your club a surprise to you?
Absolutely. You know, in the funny thing is, we did due diligence. I mean, we tried to build what became Seaman Stadium in Calgary. And I was from Calgary. Well, I'm from BC originally, but I'd moved to Calgary. My kids grew up in Calgary. I started the Calgary Dogs, all of those things. Mm-hmm. With the Calgary connection. Okotoks is about 25 miles south of Calgary, so it's sort of a bedroom community, very nice bedroom community. But in attempting to build the stadium that Don had agreed to primarily fund, we went to Calgary, City of Calgary first. Then we went to various other institutions within Calgary trying to find the right fit. The university was one option. Mount Royal University, the other college, was another option. The Indian Band was another option. We went to sort of community-minded landowners who could partner up with our proposal to build this stadium. And Calgary was desperately in need of sports facilities at that time. So it was really kind of a bizarre thing where you walk into the office and you say, we've got $15 million, this is what we're going to build you. Tell us where what land you are prepared to give us, and we'll build it right there. You won't have to pay a cent for it. But yet you get rejected five times. So it was, and when it was all said and done, I got a late night email from someone I didn't know, and he'd been the mayor of a little town called Okotoks, and said, come down here and check us out. We considered, we'll find land for you. So I did. I did a bunch of due diligence, and that involved things like identifying location of the land and that type of thing, but also studying the community. And I came from a little town called Trail, BC, and Trail's a sports fanatical town. I mean, I played hockey and baseball. We Little League fanatics all the way up through leaving high school, and all kinds of baseball players have come out of Trail, like Jason Bay and many others. But anyway, that was sort of my background, that kind of a town. And Okotoks reminded me of that kind of a town. It had a very American feel in the sense that they really valued their high school sports. Right on Main Street, there was a high school with a football stadium. I mean, the people would go out to watch it. It had lights. Their hockey team had a new arena. Mm-hmm. So there was the newspaper covered high school athletics. It was really in Trail. If you were a top player in baseball or basketball or hockey or whatever, you were in the newspaper all the time. It was a source of pride for the community. And in Calgary, you wouldn't be. Calgary doesn't even know there are high school athletics. In fact, at one point, when both of my kids played high-level basketball here, and at one point they were going to get rid of the sports programs in high school. They felt that there was a waste of money, just to give you an idea of the different attitude. But Okotoks was very different, and like I said, quite American in context, reminding me of my hometown. So at that point, I felt there was hope. But you asked, would the fans come out as they've done? No, you could never anticipate that. In fact, sort of I've told Bob Elliott a funny story about our first ever opening night after we built this stadium. Had no idea what to expect, and a bunch of the directors of our club sat together over a beer and said, let's have a little contest here and predict how many people are going to come to this opening day. We had no idea. The only context I had as part of my due diligence exercise, I'd gone out to watch their Junior B hockey games and was really, they had a nice new arena, but I was really disappointed to see they had like 300 or 400 people out there, and I thought, holy God, it's a hockey town. If that's all that's going to come out for hockey, what are we going to get for baseball? In the heat of the moment, you're really, there's a buzz going on. We just built this new stadium in their town. It was clearly, the stadium, if you haven't been, is phenomenal. And in a little town to have a sort of a double-A level type park that's got all the bells and whistles, extremely player and extremely fan-friendly in terms of viewing the games and everything else. So there was a buzz about the stadium and building this new complex. And when we did our vote as to how many people would come out, I was probably in the middle of the pack suggesting 600 people, and the guy at the high end, who's an eternal optimist about everything, said 1,500, and it was literally a scene out of Field of Dreams at the end where the cars just keep coming and coming and coming, and we were just slammed with a sellout crowd from the first day on, 2,500 people or so come, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger, and I've been shocked. We got a community. We ended up in a community that is extremely, has a lot of pride, very passionate about their own sport, the facilities and teams, and somehow they developed this connection between our club and the stadium and the town. And because businesses wanted to be part of it, people wanted to be there, they saw their neighbors, it became an event more than a baseball game, and that's really continued right up through the past year.
Yeah, clearly you guys did your due diligence, because you're drawing 70,000 fans per season, good for fourth out of the 169 summer teams in all of North America, which is incredible numbers for especially from a town like Okotoks, a small town like that. But fast forwarding to see how far this program has come. I mean, producing the likes of Jimmy Henderson, Clayton Keyes, who's drafted to the Jays, Jordan Prosh, and plus team success. I mean, you guys were 33-14 last season. Did you ever think this was possible back in Trail, BC?
I never thought it was possible. And, well, actually, I should strike that. Yes, in Trail, BC, you have to win every year. Okay,
right.
And we did mostly win. Those were the days when before the Premier League in BC, in terms of high school athletics. I know Ontario's got a league now, they call it Canada's Premier League. But before Canada's Premier League showed up, which is really an Ontario league, there was a BC Premier League, And it was, if you talk to any scout at the time, that was the elite league for high school sports baseball in the country. And the reason it was is because they had actual coaches, professional coaches, coaches that had a lot of experience. They were connected with a lot of scouting. And they blew up the sort of restrictive aspects of youth baseball. So in other words, rather than make youth baseball simply directed for the benefit of a recreational player who wants to have fun and whatever, and I don't knock that, I think that's great, but they said, you know, the elite player also needs a place to develop, and mm-hmm. this league is for that kind of a player. And they started out with six teams, it got bigger, and in not restricting who played for whom, they were able to, and by bringing in like real coaches, they were able to really develop players. And for many years, BC was producing all the draft picks and everything else. And when I started the Dogs here in Alberta as a youth team, we tapped right into the BC Premier League idea because that's where I was from. And you know, and you asked me originally about Trail. Trail had the same attitude. The problem Trail had was it was too small a center to ultimately compete with the bigger Vancouver centers once they got the same type of coaching that we had and facilities that we had in Trail. We had great facilities in Trail. We had great coaching in Trail. All kinds of kids came through there, and they'd come back and coach the guys in the summer. So you had a chance in Trail to really learn the game and get better in the game. But once, you know, 3 million people down the lower mainland started doing the same things, it became really competitive, and Trail just didn't have the numbers to compete. In the Calgary context, we kind of had the numbers, and probably the biggest fluke of all times is that, and we certainly didn't know it at the time, our original group of players, which included Jim Henderson and Emerson Frosted, who became a Triple-A player as well with the Rangers, and my own two boys, and one of whom was drafted by the Giants, and this Avery kid that I mentioned to you who came here to play from Saskatchewan got drafted by the Reds, and I mean, we were just stacked. Tanner Osberg, another kid who got drafted by the Mets. Those are all, that's our original team. Mm-hmm. There was no one on our original team that didn't have an opportunity to either play, get drafted, or opportunity to play at the Division I level. So it just so happened that was an extraordinary team in terms of talent, and they spanned a 2 or 3 year period between my youngest son and my oldest son, and guys like Henderson who were on the older area. And we had them since they were 13 years old. So by the time those guys were 16 to 18, they were, as one of the BC guys, scouts I remember saying when we were out there playing those guys and successfully, he said, you don't want to play those guys. And we were, that was a pretty good team. So mm-hmm. like I say, we didn't know it, but that team really sort of established a standard. And we've never quite matched that team for high school talent, in my opinion. But they provided sort of the original base for the summer collegiate team. Those guys would come back, gave us a very strong summer collegiate team for a number of years. And it really just fed, you know, when you get a model for where the bar is, and it's a high bar, your new guys want to live up to it. And so we created this atmosphere of competition, I think, where we have very good teams. And so I guess circling back to your question, I think what happened when I was in Trail, the fact that I was from Trail is probably partly why I was so passionate and determined and would not accept second place. And I think that rubbed off on a lot of our other coaches and volunteers that were out here. And it certainly our players got the message and developed a lot of pride in winning that you know, to this day still runs through our program.
Yeah, and you talk about, we talk about when you started, but I'm not sure if we've really got to the bottom of why. Was there a moment, I mean, 20, 30 years ago when you decided that you're going to get into development of amateur ball players, and what made you want to start something like this?
Well, I had played, as I indicated, and so, yeah. You know, I had been a pretty good baseball player. I love the sport, but I ended up going to law school, and so I got away from the game a little bit, got married, and really tragedy is at the center of this beginning of the story in a way. My wife died tragically when, you know, we were 30 and 28 years old. We had two boys that were 2 and 4. It was really the origin of this thing was it was partly my connection back with the boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was raising them in a fog, they turned out to be pretty good baseball players. I noticed just throwing wiffle balls at them, and they were knocking them all over the place. And after a few years, and by the time Little League and that kind of thing happened, it was clear they were good players, and loved it. And so I wasn't coaching them, just backyard stuff. They had other, you know, they had parent coaches for little league context and everything else. But it's like with little kids, and then they develop other friends that are also good players. And that's where they met a guy like Henderson and Fawcett, or Cameron McLeod, a whole bunch of guys that were either played in the junior national team or eventually played, were drafted or had, you know, good college careers, that kind of thing. All these guys that showed up through that period of time. And so when I watched this, I started to figure it out, and I came to kind of life, to tell you the truth, after this tragedy, watching the boys and seeing their passion for this game. And it reminded me of my passion for the game again. And through some of the other coaches around, and one of them in particular, a guy that apparently I don't remember, but apparently I played with him or against him when we were, you know, still 18, 19 years old. And he kept telling me, he said, you know, like, what are you going to do with these kids when Little League's over? Because go look at the next level. So I actually went out and I started watching where they would naturally go, the next level of baseball in Calgary. And it wasn't very good. I mean, you have dad coaches trying to control the game who really couldn't play catch. So from that interest of the kids and the passion they had and the talent they had, and there were a group of them by this time, I said, well, we need to offer them something more. If they're going to get to be better players as they get through high school, they got to learn how to play the game. They're not going to learn how to play anything at the recreational level here. So that led to us forming an elite team. And like right. I mentioned to you, our high-performance type team, and we took it seriously. The kids took it seriously. We did a lot of sort of development stuff in terms of training, physical training, running, lifting when they were at the right age, all the things that you would do if you were interested in becoming a baseball player. And we just laid out the opportunity for them, and they soaked it up like sponges. And mm-hmm. eventually that meant bringing in coaches that were better than we were, and, you know, that obviously weren't apparent, because that I found that wasn't the best way to do it. So we brought in coaches from the States to coach this group of kids, and they got, you know, they got better. But so it really was, and at that stage, Dustin, I mentioned BC had this Premier League, mm-hmm. which also was out there, and I was familiar with those kinds of programs from my time. Trails right on the border, and we played all kinds of teams from the States all the time, and they had teams that would, you know, come together kind of like a travel team, and they have a lot of them now, these travel teams, and Ontario's got a number of them, and you know, there's a number all over the country now, but the States had them for years. And so that was sort of the model between these elite travel teams in the States, which gathered together the top players at a particular age group, and what BC was doing the same type of thing at that stage. I said, well, we need to do that here. I don't know about the whole interest in the whole community of this thing, and it was quite controversial at the time, mm-hmm. but this group of kids wants it, and it's a crime to make them go and play in five house league teams. They won't get better. So that was where the original Dogs came from, and I tell you, it wasn't easy, because I said it was controversial. So it started out with the first controversy was we could never get a field to play on. The recreational groups booked all the fields, even when they didn't go out. We ended up we would recognize they only played 24 games a season, and they weren't allowed to practice. They even had a rule saying they could only practice so many times, or else it was unfair to the other teams. So that one really got me going. But we would sort of slip in practice when we could. And the bottom line is, when this particular first group of dogs that started out, when they were between 12, 14 and 13, 15, they played up always. They always played older kids. And they would be on the road for probably 80 games of the year, maybe five home games, 80 games on the road. Mm-hmm. And I think that toughened them up. They got tough, and they had a chip on their shoulder about, about having to travel, not being able to play at home, and they got so, like the guy said, you don't want to play them. They made you pay when you played those guys. You knew you had a game, I'll tell you. But so anyway, it's all started with there was no sort of venue, no place, no organization here for the high performance player at that time, and there were other places, and we had a good group. And we felt we had to give them this opportunity. And that principle is what motivates us right now. You sort of throw in to that bouillabaisse the concept that academics and athletics are equally important, and we want to give them the opportunity to go ahead and play at college. Then they got to be good enough to play at college. We weren't afraid to look in the mirror and say, mm-hmm. we're not good enough right now. We've got to get good enough. And that was sort of our attitude, and we worked at it. So when we came up short, we found a way to improve in that area. And that sort of is what drove the original vision.
You talk about your sons that you coached, obviously Vince now in the Portland Trailblazers front office after being a talented infielder, to say the least, at Niagara University, and Matt pitched on the junior national team after the Dogs. Many people have a deep-rooted love for the game of baseball, but often it dies, I guess, when their sons stop playing. Where did your love for the game come from? And obviously you talk about your sons, but what made you want to keep going once they stopped playing?
Well, honestly, somebody else asked me this question once, and I said, well, it wasn't just my sons. But first of all, I played and loved baseball myself, independent of them. And secondly, when they got into the mix as young guys that were passionate and loved the game themselves, yeah, that renewed my interest after this sort of horrific tragedy that we all suffered as a family. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I did have this base where I loved the sport. I mean, I'll never forget tears in my eyes when I went back to Trail and the boys were little one time, and Trail was hosting some World Series, and there were 6,000 fans in this little town at Butler Park, or where I played growing up, and they were that enthusiastic. I mean, Trail only had about 12,000 people, and here's half of them watching this high-level amateur game. So I had that as a base, but you know, the other thing is, these kids, and I think it goes back to what I said, that playing 80 games on the road with a young group of kids that really want to be players, you bond. They all kind of became like my kids. Mm-hmm. And I feel now like the Dogs are my kids. And I know some of the original guys that are still around in terms of the volunteers helping me out. Some of them, they coached for a period of time and did different things. Now they've done different roles, but a lot of them are still around and buy into the vision, are proud of what was accomplished. But all of us kind of felt like the Dogs are our baby, you know, like, so we have a lot of, if I'm the founding father of the Dogs, there's a lot of founding uncles of the Dogs. And the kids that come through, we really treat it as a family. We always say, once a dog, always a dog. Our alumni come back all the time. There's incredible pride. And I know when Jimmy, like we talked about Henderson, who pitched for the Mets last year, mm-hmm. when he came back, when we built this new facility, he never got to play in it, either as a youth player from 12 up or as a summer collegiate player, he never got to play in it either. We hadn't built it yet. His comment was, well, these spoiled little brats, why didn't we had the better team than these guys, and why aren't we in this thing? But it's that kind of healthy competition that drives this entire program. And I think in the end, these kids, the reason for my ongoing interest is the Dogs are my baby, just like my kids were my babies at one time. Mm-hmm. It's growing up. I'm driven to, I'm a perfectionist. I want to do it better, constantly trying to push the envelope. And we over the years, have developed incredible coaching staff. One thing we haven't talked about is, like, I'm not kidding you, Dustin. This is not somebody blowing. I'm not blowing my horn. I'm just telling you the reality. Mm-hmm. There are no facilities to play on like we've got. There's no way. You can go down, maybe if you go to Cal Ripken and find something down in where he's at. There's maybe a couple places in the States, but in terms of the concentrated facilities for the numbers that we've got, there's nothing like. We have two full size stadiums that are as good as any single A stadium that there is. We've got three other youth stadiums. They're all set in a spring training like atmosphere where you can walk from one to the other. So you can imagine the ability to mentor kids. Like when the little guys want to be the big guys, they want to play in the bigger field. And you know, it's a constant kind of development opportunity there that we've built, and we're really proud of it. And the same thing goes on in terms of the indoor facility that we go through the winter with. So we've got all of those things going on, and we've been able to, because we're not totally nonprofit, like we don't take any money out of this at all. It's right. All about the player. It's 100%, I can tell you, about the development of the player, starting when he's 13 years old, if he comes to us. And that allows us to do things that others wouldn't do. Because we don't need to make a profit, all the money will either go back into the coaching staff, the competition, i.e. the travel to top tournaments and showcases, or it goes back into the facilities. So you got facilities, you got the competition, and then you got a coaching staff that continues to grow. I mean, we've got 8 bullpen coaches right now. At any given time, if you come starting in April, you'll see 14 coaches, and these are not your dad kicking around coaches. Mm-hmm. These are all guys that either coached or played collegiately or professionally. They're independent. So they're 100% motivated by things like, how's this kid going to get better? And I don't know where you have that kind of an atmosphere in a totally nonprofit thing. Like, if our program makes money, it goes right back into the program.
Right.
Get another coach, get a pro batter, you know, get some more video equipment to analyze swings, get some more batting cages. You know, that's 100% what the program's about. So I mean, it really gives us an advantage in terms of development possibilities to some of the other. And there's a lot of great programs out now, don't get me wrong. There didn't used to be, but there are now. There's no question. And but I do think we have an advantage over most of them, just simply because we're so motivated by the development and not the dollar. And mm-hmm. All of our facilities are the result of either donations or the model we've created, where when you've got a summer collegiate team that basically has, you know, no expenses other than their uniforms and travel, that's sort of the way it goes, and the coaching staff, and you average 3,300 fans a game that want to come out, pay, buy concessions, businesses want to support you, you create a lot of revenue, and that collegiate team creates almost $2 million in revenue that is poured right back into what I just talked about, the
right.
coaches, facility, and the competition. And not for the college team, because, you know, they come and play for 3 months. It goes back into the youth program. And so, I'll tell you, I know there's lots of choices. I took my son to Vancouver so he could get coaching when he was selected for that junior national team. So I understand going to the coaches. But if I'm looking around for a place which has got sort of a huge advantage from a development standpoint, I would be checking this thing out
yeah.
here. It is something to see.
Yeah, from the pictures you showed me, obviously, the way you get fans to turn out, but more than that, it's about the mentality of the team or the organization, the development, the coaches, as you said, and obviously a big part of the Dogs program success, as you talked briefly about a little bit earlier, is Don Seaman, who now has the Dogs Stadium named after him, right? So just how influential has Don been?
Well, Don had 2 grandsons, right? So that benefited from the Dogs, that went on to play college with the Dogs and everything else. And he was amazed right at the beginning with the original team that. And what impressed him was how many kids got scholarships, John. And I tell him. And then the next year, how many kids got scholarships? And you have to understand, Don is he's an incredible athlete, number one. He's 91 now, and he just got back from snorkeling in Borneo. So he's like one of those guys. He's unbelievable. He was competitive in every sport he ever played. And so that's his overall attitude. And he and his brother, they were very successful in business, and partly because they did not shy from competition, I'll tell you. And then when he saw the results, which was academic success as well as athletic success, he just thought, this is something that I want to support. Of all the things that are out there, it sort of locked into his idea of sports are the greatest training ground for business that there is. And you won't remember, you're too young, but there was a well-known hockey player that he's sort of, when I was a kid, I looked up to this guy, Bill Hay, who was the center with the Chicago Blackhawks, and he'd gone to college, though, and got an engineering degree, and Don and Doc's company actually hired this guy, and they were so impressed, because they've been athletes themselves, at the opportunity to go through college and play a high level of athletics, and they encouraged Bill, when he went and had his pro career with the Chicago Blackhawks, to do that and to come back and work with them when he finished that, which he did as an engineer. And so that, you can see, it was a marriage of ideas. Our vision really merged with his vision.
Right.
And so when Don saw that we were faced with this catastrophe and fighting with this independent team, I'm not kidding you, they turned the lights off in the middle of our game, they'd phone and get our fans' cars towed away. If the media was out, they'd tow a reporter's car away. It was just a gong show. And they were fighting for survival. Like I say, none of them lasted more than a season or two, and they went bankrupt. But when Don saw that, after his first comment, who is that a-hole? And I said, well, I told you that's the president of this independent team. You can see what we have to put up with. He turned the sprinklers on in the fourth inning when we're playing, for example. And that's when Don said, this is ridiculous. This is worthy of its own place to play, and let's build it. So that then he energized me, and it really, he wouldn't take no for an answer, because I knew right. what it would cost. And I said, Don, have you ever had an investment that you made and you got zero return? Because you're going to get zero return from this investment. He said, some things are worth a zero return. And wow. recently he told me, he said, I didn't make a lot of money in this investment, but this has been the best investment I ever made. Because when I come down here and I see the look in those kids' faces, and I see how many kids are getting to play at college, and I see all these fans in the community embracing this, that's the best investment a person can make, because you're investing in kids. And it's true, and that's how this whole thing happened. I agree. I mean, we had a very strong development program, but it's tough to play 80 games on the road every year.
Right.
And up to develop in the winter, unless you've got an indoor facility in our country. So Don made that a reality, and that was sort of the final brick in the wall.
Moving forward to 2017, obviously the season will be your 10th anniversary season, and while we're on the topic of influence and how it relates to the Okotoks program success, as you talked about before, a lot of credit must go to your coaching staff, so we might as well talk about them now. Specifically, Lou Pote, a World Series champ, and a former Angel, Joe Surgeon, former Marlin farmhand, and Jeff Duda, who pitched at Central Arizona and with the Canadian Junior National Team. You talked about it before, but how important are these coaches, and can a player really receive better development anywhere in the country in your eyes?
Not in my eyes.
Yeah.
But I'm not exactly, objective either. There are lots of good programs, and a lot of great Canadian players have been developed. I give Greg Hamilton a lot of credit, because he's really stuck with a lot of kids. He's developed a junior national program. A lot of good players have gone on to professional baseball. You see more Canadians having those kinds of opportunities. Great. And the other guy, as I go down this road, I've always said, is Bob Elliott, because I told Bob, I didn't know Bob. I first became aware of Bob through the Canadian Baseball Network, and I said, he was ranking top Canadians. I remember my second son, his left-handed pitcher at the time, was highly ranked in terms of coming out. He was the same year as Lowen, and Bob had ranked the scouts, had given him rankings of guys where they might be drafted. That's when he first started this thing. But I sort of followed this, and I saw that, and then in coaching and reaching out to the kids that we were trying to develop, it became really sort of a major deal. This was the sort of the beginnings of a lot of the social media stuff and the networking and all of that among players. And Bob, in my mind, made it became a sort of a place for all these players to go, because you can't be in BC or Alberta and play the Ontario Blue Jays or the Mets or whoever mm-hmm. the top team now down there every day. But you can read about their players, and you can see what they're doing, and you can see who they're playing against, and you can see whether or not you want to match up with them and attend the perfect game showcase or another showcase out in the West like we used to do, sort of with the Derrico games and things like that. So he created sort of this information station where the top players in particular could see what the other top players were doing, and that would challenge them and create healthy competition, which is at the core of development. So all of that really fit into this whole idea. So between what Greg was doing, developing players, and one thing about Greg is the best players got ahead. They made a lot of decisions. Joey Votto probably didn't like it when he didn't make the junior national team one year, but that's what they assessed. It was that kind of independence, the assessment of talent. And then you have Bob kicking in. So all these factors are coming in to breed this kind of competition among the elite player, the high-performance player, and to keep encouraging them. And that was super. So now, the reason I bring up that preamble is that because through that process, you've now, as those players have gone on to college or professional careers and then completed those things, they love the sport. They've created a passion like we have for the sport. And they've come back, and there's a lot of good coaches across the country right now who came through that. The young coaches that are now 32 years old or 35 years old or whatever they are, and they all go through sort of a period as a young coach and sort of, you mature as a coach. It's all important, but there's phases. But there's a lot of that kind of coaching out there, which is fantastic. And we too have tapped into that. I go and throw BP every once in a while. Hit bungos. I still think I can do it better than a lot of them down there. But I'm 60 years old, and we've got guys that have come through our program or through competition and tournaments and things we've met. And actually, our head guy now is a guy named Alan Cox, and Alan's over 40. He came out of Kentucky. He was born in California, came out of Kentucky, was a middle infielder. So he's assembled an incredible staff. But again, an independent coach who's studied the game, loves the game, and really wants to help the kids develop. So you got him at the head, and then he's brought in as now his current, I guess you call him co-head coach or whatever, is Jeff Duda. And like you said, Duda played for the junior national team. He was a very good college player. He played for the Dogs as a summer collegiate player, excellent pitcher. And over the last 3 or 4 years, while he was also, I think, pitcher of the year with the Quebec Capitals, but and he's a student of the game. He's a pitcher who understands pitching. He threw 90 miles an hour with a slider and everything, but his forte was thinking about how to get guys out and advantages on hitters, and that makes a pretty good pitching coach, and you're right. So you mentioned three of the ex-pro guys that also joined us in the last couple of years, but there's more. I mean, Lou Pope got a World Series ring with Anaheim, and another seasoned coach in the 40s who, good Jargon Fortune, has three boys 12 and under or 13 and under that are wearing Dogs uniforms right now, and they got a pretty good player. So, but I mean, you got a guy like that now in there. He's been with us for a couple of years, working with pitchers. Sargent in the last year, who also was a successful pro and college pitcher and a lefty to boot, so he helps us with our left-handed pitching. But we also, call on guys that know what the Dogs philosophy is about. And I'm thinking not only of Jordan Procession, who played with us since he was 13 and now is in the Red Sox organization as a catcher, but a guy like Tyler Hollick, who started when he was 12 years old, played 3 years of professional ball. He was JUCO Player of the Year in Arizona, and went on. He was drafted by the Giants, played 3 years in the Giants organization. And when he had enough, when he didn't feel like this was what he wanted to do anymore, what's the first thing he does? He comes back to the Dogs because we were his family. And he's now one of our hitting and outfield coaches. The list goes on. I mean, there's eight guys. You can another kid named Brenton Guthrie played in North Carolina, has come back. He was a Dog since he was 13. So you get the idea. And I'm sure I'm leaving out some of the great coaches we've got down there, but there is, of the mix of, the thing is, they all have the experience. They all either play or coach at the collegiate or professional level, and at least half of them are graduates of our program. And we have a fairly specific philosophy, most of which I stole from somebody or another, but I don't know, Dustin, if you're old enough, the LA Angels with Mike Socha used to have a coaching philosophy called the Angels Way, and it involved a lot of offensive baseball. Like the defense was a given. They were going to tighten up the defense, always be a good defensively. Their pitchers were going to throw strikes. But on the offensive side, they were going first to third. They were scoring on every single from second. They were reading balls down and taking a base. And when I became familiar with that, and to me, that adapted perfectly to the youth development game, because at the youth level, you can take advantage of weakness like nobody else. So I kept saying to our guys, you get thrown out at second base when you read a ball down or break the ball down, that's my fault. You go. We're going every time. And you can really turn games into a track meet. And it's the same thing. You're not going to hit doubles against good pitches all the time, but if you're in scoring position all the time and you put pressure on the defense all the time, I always say at the youth game, sometimes the pitchers are pretty good, but you know what? The eight guys behind him may not be quite as good. If you put pitch pressure on that pitcher, he's always in the stretch. At the youth game, you can you can really wear a guy out. And so that's became, we developed the dog's way, our own philosophy of playing, which really integrated a lot of those offensive baseball techniques. And I think if you talk to scouts who watch us play, they'll say those guys run the bases like crazy. I mean, with or without, and you don't have to be fast to take advantage, get a good lead, good secondary lead, read a ball down, and go, and be safe at our level. So all of those things really contribute, and I think having a bunch of coaches that understand how we play mixed in with a lot of very seasoned and mature professional coaches creates sort of a perfect atmosphere for a kid who wants to be a really good player.
Right, and you talk about the experience the coaches have, like Alan Cox. They not only have experience, but they have the initiative to create programs and prep classes like the ACT on their own time for high school players in your Dogs Academy teams. But as we talk about your program, we can't forget about the biggest dog of them all. Obviously, that's you. You've been named as one of the most influential Canadians in baseball numerous years, and you're the highest volunteer on the 2016 list, a compilation which includes Canadian icons like Fergie Jenkins, Larry Walker, Justin Morneau, and Joey Votto. Is this just kind of a satisfying byproduct of all the work you and your program has done?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, people who know me will say that I don't like sort of being identified all the time. I don't like the limelight so much. Honestly, I don't do it for that reason. Never have done it for that reason. But I have to say it is satisfying to be recognized this way because it has been a lot of work, I'll tell you. And the dogs are sort of like my baby, and there is a point of pride I have over what the organization's accomplished and all that kind of stuff. And but again, and it really is an honor in the sense that a guy like Bob, who's in the Hall of Fame, you know, he's won the Sphinx Award as a journalist. He's been around baseball forever, more than anybody. But for a guy like that and what he's created with your network and through the years of journalism is sort of the understanding that baseball has all these levels. And you can't just single out the major league level if you want to promote the game and sort of develop the game in a country like Canada where it's been a secondary sport, you know, where hockey's been the idea. So he's created this platform, like I said, mm-hmm. at all levels, and it shows appreciation for what the volunteers are doing. I mean, there would be no dogs without people like myself, and there's others that are, invest a lot of passion, money, and things into the dogs, no question. You know, long list, trust me. But there's other programs. You know, there's guys that I've known for years in the BC Premier League who weren't getting paid and created this model league for high development baseball, for high performance baseball that resulted in all kinds of opportunities for players. And I think of those guys, you know, when it comes to this kind of recognition. And there's the same thing going on in Ontario and other provinces where you've got people that are doing this because they love the sport, they get passionate about the sport, they're not making a ton of money doing this, but they really want to promote the sport. And Bob, mm-hmm. in this network, and by this recognition, has really created a platform where those people get recognized along with the ones at the top of the food chain, which is obviously we all know, we all watch Major League Baseball. That's what, you know, I must watch 180 games a year, so mm-hmm. We all love that. But there's something to be said about creating sort of a culture where you celebrate the volunteers that are out there creating the Larry Walkers and then the Joey Vottos and then the Jimmy Hendersons from our organization and the Jordan processions from our organization. There's something to be said in celebrating what those people do, because the success wouldn't be there for a lot of these guys if you didn't have that.
Oh, for sure. I totally agree. And as we move forward, I mean, you've developed this program. You're now you're the managing director of the Dogs program, which recruits high schoolers from Atlantic Canada for the academy team and Pac-10 players for the summer college Dogs. I guess what I'm trying to say is, what's a day in the life like for you? Do you try and stay as close as possible to the team? I know you've talked about it before, that you're still throwing batting practice, and I've seen photos of you still throwing batting practice. So I guess, what's a day in the life like for you, especially during the season?
I wish I could be more hands-on on the coaching side. Not so much the coaching side, but sort of the drill side, like engaging, throwing batting practice, hitting it. I still have a law practice that I work on. I'm, you know, involved with the National Firm Board of Lenders Rebate, so I do have two jobs here. One is the dogs. But I love it. You asked me what the day looks like. Before I talked to you today, I already had a long conversation with head coach Cox. about what he saw and what he learned from the the American Coaches Conference. That we just had six coaches of our academy coaches down to the American Coaches Conference now, and I want to know how that went. So he gave me a fulsome report on what's going on in that world and who he connected with. And I'd already read two or three reports from our younger coaches, some of whom went with him, and what they did down there, what kinds of drills they picked up that they thought might be useful for us and developing our players. So I'm pretty hands-on. I mean, I guess I left out the communications I've had with our administrative or operations crew about the summer collegiate team, because we're looking at some renovations in our ticket office. And we're running a banquet that is a sold-out banquet that Buck Martinez is coming out for in the next 2 weeks. So, I kind of like two jobs will keep you pretty busy.
It sounds like you're keeping pretty busy from when you started this until now. And before I let you go, obviously I want to thank you for joining the show and obviously shedding some light on an incredible baseball program. A lot of people don't really know that Canada has these incredible development programs in line, and it's just good to hear about the Okotoks Dogs and what they're able to do and how the city has really immersed themselves in the baseball team. But before I let you go, Bob wanted me to ask you if you remember his impression of walking into your indoor facility in 2011.
Yes, I think he quoted Kinsella when he said, "Is this heaven?"
Yeah,
something to that effect. Because then we were covered in snow and everything else, and one of our other directors had picked Bob up and brought him out, and he just. I love his reaction, because it's the same reaction I had when I first walked into it. Like, you think, and when you think of something that really comes from a lot of people's heart, you know, like I said, if you get away from the money aspect of the sport, now you break down the passion and the love of the actual game, and that's what's reflected out there. And so I still do that. I still go out there. It's 20 below here. I'll probably go out there within the next week. And in the press box that we got that is perched and overlooks our stadium, our Stephen Stadium, and probably have a beer or a pot and just look out at that field covered in snow and put a giant smile on my face. That's kind of how I feel about the sport and what we're doing.
Yeah, in the dead of winter, I mean, you said you guys went past the snowbanks, a guy was hitting ground balls on a full infield, and yes, is this heaven? And there, I think that's a perfect way to wrap this up, and I appreciate you coming on the show again, and thank you so much, and definitely good luck next season.
Thanks a lot, Dustin. Thanks to you, and also pass on my thanks to Bob for all he does for baseball in this country, because he does cover the gamut from our young guys, the amateur guys, right up to the
mm-hmm.
It's a huge platform that I think is a big part of baseball success in our country. So all the best. Hope you get to come out here sometime so you can look at those pictures in real time.